I have Tatavon here. I'm going to tell a little story before we get started, before we get to Tatavon. I used to go to Air One every moment of the day, pretty much, many years ago. And this was like 5, 6, or 7 years ago. I walk into Air One one day, I get some food, I come outside, and there's a, first of all, when I walk in, I see like an A-frame, and it's like some weird writing on it. I don't even really see it. And I walk outside, and Tatavon's there. He's a giant. He's 6'7", like a literal giant, hovering above everybody. And he's wearing a shirt that says kind of the same thing as the sign that I saw just like randomly sitting there. And on his shirt, it says 6'7" Jew will freestyle rap for you and Qigong healing too. And I think you actually striked up the conversation with me.
It's very possible. I'm not shy.
Yeah, but anyway, several years later, I interviewed you maybe a year ago about getting your testicles penetrated with a machete, for lack of a better words.
The way that sounds, it makes it sound like it was an accident or you know.
You were impaled on purpose by a machete. Welcome. Introduce yourself for, by the way, I was doing some research on you and I did see that, did you go to U of M?
Yeah, I went to University of Michigan. I feel like we had a Midwest conversation for a moment because I remember you being quite the hockey player once upon a time. Right. And I felt we got into that conversation. Yeah, I went to University of Michigan for 4 years. I got a psychology major. And actually, it's the end of, towards the end of college where my journey really takes off. Towards the end of college, I meet a, I have a bad knee injury from rowing. Our coach overworked us and I injured my knee. And I struggled with my knee injury for 2 years, trying to do physical therapy and trying to make progress. And I wasn't really making progress. And I found this, this old hippie couple in New Jersey. During the day, they were advertising executives. But in their off hours, they were Tai Chi Qigong practitioners. And they physically altered my knee without touching me in a substantial way in 1 hour on the table. And that experience changed my whole view on energy, on healing, on medicine, anything you could think of. My worldview was just blown wide open. And that's where a lot begins. And then I go back to Ann Arbor to begin my senior year. And I'm obsessed with Qigong and anything Qi related.
Great. I had similar experiences because you can only study so much in psychology and you're like, what else is there? And then it's almost like you're ripe. I felt ripe for when I started meeting magical masters that were doing things that I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem possible. However, it feels in alignment greater than anything else that I was ever taught before.
Absolutely. And I think, so when I had my healing experience, what I always focused on really was the fact that my knee was so much better when I would talk about it. But the part that I would tend to leave out, it was the part where I felt like I couldn't breathe and I was going to start hysterically crying. I didn't. That didn't happen, but I was like on the verge of just like, I couldn't understand it. I didn't know what that, like, I didn't understand at that time the connection between emotions and your physical problems in the body. I sort of didn't really value that. But I remember that was a big part of it. And I do remember obviously seeing swirling colors and all of those types of things, which I found really fascinating and I really enjoyed. And I wasn't anybody that did psychedelics. So for me, those moments of wild color, you know, that happened, you know, right then and there. And it was pretty amazing.
So is this the time where, so you're a nomad? Is that yeah, a literal, like literal nomadic life you're living? And so Have you been doing that since this moment that you're describing to us right now?
Yeah. So basically I graduate college and then what happens is I'd seen a Tai Chi Qigong master in Ann Arbor that used to do his thing by the cube. And every now and then on a Sunday morning, because I would get up early, I'd kind of just catch eyes with him. But it always seemed really graceful and really subtle. And I always felt like a bull in the china shop. So I never really thought that that was anything that I would be able to understand or do. And we put limits on ourselves to stop ourselves from growing. But regardless, we still find our way there. And my friend's dad was a chiropractor, and he was basically like, hey, you can just call him up from the yellow pages. And I was like, okay. And I call him up, and he's like, who told you? And I was like, you know, Mr. McLean. And he's like, okay, come over. And so I show up and I sit on his couch, and my world changes, and he just starts cultivating his chi. And I remember what was so amazing about it was he would put me out in like 10 minutes. I was like, and I'd come to, and it was like, I didn't know where I was. It was like, whoa, but I would walk differently. I felt different. It wasn't until the third time that he did that, that I thought, you know what? I can't be tired every time I show up here. There's something that he's doing with this energy that's putting me under. And that was where my ability started to awaken. But I didn't know that's what was happening. And he wasn't a man of many words, so he wasn't telling me that. Or he himself didn't maybe fully understand the level of impact he was having on me. I don't know. We never really got in a conversation about it.
So you said your abilities. What do you mean by that?
So I meet him that summer, and I just start having weird things happen to me. I'll be at a party. I'll say a few words to someone. They would just like break it down crying and telling me their whole life story. And I'd always had some degree of that, but now it was happening more regularly, and it was happening faster. It was happening in a way where even some of my friends would notice, and they would sort of make fun of me about it. And I hadn't done anything where my rational mind was like, okay, I think I have something. And I then leave Ann Arbor and I go to New York. And I have this moment where I'm with a friend and we drive by the World Trade Center. And it was a very poignant moment. It was September 10th. Now, I don't want to say I was psychic or anything, but I just remember looking at the building. And I thought, I wonder what would happen if that fell down. That was it. That was my only question. There was no other thought in my mind, nothing right. About planes or hijackings or any of that. That was it. And the next day, I obviously got part of my answer. Lo and behold, a few days later, I'm with the same woman that I was driving in the car with. She was driving. I was sitting passenger side, and she was having an angina attack on her heart. She was crying and she was in pain. Stress related to the 9/11 events. And I just didn't want to listen to her cry anymore. I just wanted her to stop crying. And I just reached out my hand without touching her. And I felt this weight, and I just pulled it off of her. And then she looked at me like startled. She's like, what'd you do? And I was like, I don't know. As if that's how I answered, you know? And then she was like, well, doesn't really hurt. And I was like, I guess that's good. And because she was really close with me, in my rational mind, I didn't trust her. So I said, let me try this out on random New Yorkers that think this is BS, and let me see what they have to say. And that led me on a very weird, wild journey that has taken me, you know, from everywhere to anywhere over these last 23 years. And then finding people that are levels far beyond anything that I, you know, am a vessel for at this point. And, you know, that's what I've been really most intrigued by and fascinated by, and I love sharing.
Great. We'll get into that. I just want to mention that you weren't the only one that had that precognition about the World Trade Centers. There's random number generators that have just been generating numbers randomly for decades, and they can look during significant events like 9/11, and they can see that people's consciousness, or something rather, is affecting random number generators during these momentous moments in history. And it's kind of grouped in these studies that are called precognition, where it seems like the consciousness or something, the heart, is able to sense a significant event that's going to happen within our reality. And I really resonate with what you're saying about, it's like a connection. It's a connection to another version of reality. And it's a wondering. It shows up to me as a wonder a lot as well. Like you said, I wonder what would happen if these fell down.
Yeah. I want to add to that number generating thing. I don't remember if it was 1 year later or 2 year later, but on 9/11, the pick three lotto win was the 9/11. And I remember that because it really like, they kind of jolted a few people. And it also, humorously enough, one of the first great sidekicks I ever met was at a train station in New York, and his name was Akashan. And Akashan would just randomly came up to me, asked me to heal his feet, and he started giving me psychic information. But he was personally obsessed with Pick Three Lotto, and he rolled his own American Spirit cigarettes. He was always just writing down numbers, trying to figure out what the Pick Three Lotto would be. And I guess he had more success with it than most. So, but I took me in my thoughts to that time.
So you are mentioning your abilities, and I know that you've been around the world traveling, seeking out gurus, mystics, teachers to scrutinize. I mean, maybe that's a strong word, observe. I'll just use observe. Yeah. So what could you give us right now before we get into that? What is something that is tangible that people can take with them and everybody can use that you've learned through this journey?
I love the phrase. When I got my knee healed, there was a phrase that I heard that I really love, and it kind of goes back to what we were saying. It's called knowing without knowing, and allowing yourself to trust when you know without knowing. And so I think it's really difficult for this world where everyone's always trying to be hyper rational and really conform to what they think is, you know, rational thinking. But sometimes in life, you just know. You know you have to go somewhere. You know you have to do something. You know a certain person is coming. And I remember my first trip to India, I was a bit nervous. But what I did know is there was going to be an older woman I was going to meet on one of the planes, and she was going to bring me somewhere. I didn't know what she looked like. I didn't know what her name was. I didn't even know where she was bringing me. So I'm on the lookout for an older woman that I don't know what she looks like, and I don't know where she's bringing me, and I don't even know if she's consciously looking for me. And there are three legs to this flight to India. First leg, no luck. Second leg, no luck. Third leg of the plane, I'm starting to doubt my sanity, right? And I'm starting to be like, why did I make up this story? Because your ego can try to trick you, right? You can create ego stories to try to, you know, make yourself feel good. For me, I was like, there was none of that. It was just, excuse me, this older woman, she's going to bring you somewhere. And I sit down, I have autobiography of a yogi on me. The flight attendant talks me up a whole bunch. We have a great conversation. And she goes, you know what? You're too tall to sit here. Let me switch your seat. And she switches my seat next to an older British Indian woman. And I mention a certain guru's name, and she goes, it's Shivaratri, which is actually coming up March 8th this time. And she goes, I have a car waiting. You must come. So there wasn't even like a discourse. It wasn't like, oh, you know, I'm going to go that. If you're interested, none of that. It was, I have a car waiting. You must come. Literally was a sentence out of her mouth when I mentioned that. And so even though I don't think she consciously knew that she was looking for someone to pick up, I knew. And when I said, you know, whatever ashram or guru I had mentioned in that moment, boom, away I went. So that knowing without knowing and trusting that in really difficult situations, I think is a real key for people to hold on to and to cultivate. And when you don't know what to do, you know, you can't do it in every situation, but close your eyes, focus on your breathing, and just try to get as quiet as you can. And I find that has served me so well on so many occasions. It's not about rushing here, rushing there, or, you know, making a decision out of fear or panic. It's about slowing down and just seeing what it is that you're meant to do or you're supposed to do.
Because a lot of times we're talking about shifting paradigms or shifting realities, and there will be those moments where the mind steps in, because the mind is, at least from my interpretation, the mind is wanting to remain where it is. And so, like you said, three flights, nothing happening. You have this feeling.
I'm doubting myself at that point. Yeah. I mean, I'm like, I'm going to India. What am I doing? I'm expecting to meet some old lady on a plane. She's going to bring me somewhere, you know? Like, what? Right. What? And then at the same time, I was like, can I at least make up a good lie in my head? Like something that sounds more interesting, you know? But yeah, just the last minute, boom, it occurred.
I thank you for sharing that, because it is something I've been around and faced with as well. And it almost seems like almost every moment of life is a certain version of that level of trust. And you get access to the flow when you are in this level of trust. And so thank you. So in case you guys missed that, when you start to feel a little like, whoa, what's happening? Close your eyes, focus on your breath, and trust.
Can I add something else? So sometimes what I've cultivated for myself is I work with a lot of sounds or mantras. Yes. So sometimes, let's say you're just mine, it's just going a million miles a minute. So I'll just, depends how, what I need, but sometimes I'll just go. And just that moment, I'll kind of recenter. I want to apologize for any beeping button. I didn't do whatever you're supposed to do to make sure no notifications come in. Do you want me to try to do that right now?
No.
Okay.
Sorry, so, I didn't hear anything, actually.
Okay, I'm so
But what were you just savvy. Doing, just for people that may be listening and not watching, describe what you just did.
So it's kind of an intuitive thing for me, but I just kind of open my mouth wide and I just do the biggest, I guess it's almost like an inhale and an exhale at the same time. But it's never anything I thought about. The first time I used it, I actually used it on someone just slightly above. They had a really bad infection and I went a few inches above it. And I did it on their staph infection. And I just had an instinct to do it. And I saw them a few days later and it was looking a lot better. And they were living out on the street and, you know, kind of living that, substance street life, right? So they weren't really putting themselves in ideal situations to probably make that get better. But it looked a lot better. And she saw me. She's like, look. And I was like, oh, I guess maybe that does something. I mean, a lot of my stuff was like trial and error. I never had some like great ambition to be a vessel for healing. Consciously that I was aware of, I just sort of stumbled onto it. And I just noticed that people kept telling me they were impacted. And so I just kept doing it.
So you were talking about the breath and just something you did.
Yeah.
You mentioned chanting. Do you have anything to say about chanting or toning? Is this stuff that you do with people? Is this something that people can do on their own? Or are you special?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, some people really get it. So, but for the most simplistic, basic, just and then sometimes I'll go a little bit higher into a
Yeah, that impacted me. I mean,
my throat's a little dry right now, so normally I got a bit of a cough at the moment. Normally it's a little smoother for me, but yeah.
This is essentially a tool, right? I've heard people say that anything you use is an aspect or an expression of the divine or source or God or the universe. And we all have our own toolbox. And I definitely encourage people to practice. And I like that you include a spectrum, right? So it's a sound and you can shift the degree of vibration within it.
Absolutely. I always, you know, when I'll work with somebody, I just kind of get a sense of what they need. And sometimes I'll find I'm actually doing the mantras and the sounds to just kind of deal with the space I'm in. Because sometimes, you know, remember I was healing on the streets in New York, bars, clubs, all these non-idyllic places, especially when I started, you know, just things would just unfold where they were. And so sometimes these kind of sounds and these mantras would kind of help to shift the energy in the space to just make everything smoother. I didn't necessarily consciously always know that. I was just doing what I was doing. But I would notice sometimes, I was like, oh, when the space is already, you know, there, I was like, oh, I seem to chant less, or I make less sounds or tones. So
tell us a little bit about what you got going with your YouTube series.
Yeah. So I have a series called Spiritual Schmuck. And the reason we call it Spiritual Schmuck is because I think miraculous phenomena, all of these things can also be really funny. And I also feel like the average person that doesn't believe in this just thinks I'm schmuck. And so that's fine. But if I am, I'm a spiritual schmuck. And so that's kind of, that's where the premise of the show is. What I want to do is I want to expose people to different phenomena in different religions, cultures, places around the world, and show them that it's always existed and always will exist. Just the modern Western world has chosen to look away. Now, that being said, I'm trying to find the real McCoy and the real deal, and not just stuff that's pretty good. I'm trying to find the extraordinary. And so I want to go and I want to film that. And I also want to do it in a way that's humorous, because I have seen people that are legit filmed. And when I watch it, I go, oh, man, they did that in a way that felt so hokey that if I didn't know that person was the real deal, I would have watched this and be like, man, this is so cheesy. And I was like, come on, just like stop trying to be so serious about it all the time, you know? So that's an element of what Spiritual Schmuck is this travel comedy and seeking out these, you know, supernatural, special people around them.
And your first series is El Machete?
Yes. So during the pandemic, I was, saw this headline, this article is like, guy recommending rum and camphor oil as a way to avoid COVID. And that was kind of like the headline of the article. And then I go into it. I was like, wait, this guy uses a machete on people after giving a medical diagnosis with a candle and wax? Well, why is that not the headline of the article, right? Usually they lead with the most fantastical right. thing. In this case, they led with what I found the least interesting part. So I delve into it. And in the comments, I was just reading and I go, you know what? I think this guy might have the gift. And I started making TikTok videos about it. And I had people reaching out to me, usually who were now in Miami or somewhere else, and saying, yeah, yeah, you know, Jorge Goliat is his name. And they're telling me, yeah, my brother was born paralyzed. He couldn't walk. Now he does. My uncle was really sick, you know, some type of cancer. Now it's gone. So, you know, I had these testimonials from strangers on TikTok. And, you know, just from what I saw in the news story. And I said, you know what? I want to go and I want to document this and I want to share this. And so that led me to be like, I want to go and I want to film this. And I had a friend of mine, Al, and I know Al from Whole Foods. I mean, we're friends beyond that now, just like we know from Air One. Yeah, I make friends at grocery stores, in case you're wondering. So Al from Whole Foods, and I mentioned it to him, and then just casually one day he's like, yeah, I'll go with you. And I was like, okay, well, you know, that's cool, but we still need someone to film and we need to edit, you know. And he said, I think I know someone. And then I got on a phone call with them and they said, yeah, it's always been my dream to film this kind of stuff. And then Al's former partner was a head editor on a show called Tiny House Nation. She really liked the idea. So she's been my creative collaborator on Spiritual Schmuck. And, you know, we fleshed out 7 mini episodes, probably average 8.5 minutes long. And it takes you on our whole journey to find Jorge Goliath. And there'll be eventually interviews that we have with him that we'll put out later. We just, it's a lot of work and a lot of time and money needed to do it. But we've, you know, we've been able to get 7 solid episodes to kind of give people a sense of what we're doing.
And just to give people a preview, this guy was actually taking a machete and pulling stuff out of your body, including your testicles.
Yes. Yes, that is correct. I guess technically the medical area would be the scrotum. I guess my testicles were left alone just in the scrotum itself. Just to be technical, you know, but I always joke, yes, my balls. I'm like, yeah, my balls. Yeah, I think one of the interesting things, you know, so I want to speak to like skeptical people because there should be a lot of them unless they, you know, grew up around this. He's wearing short sleeves. He's very insistent that you take out your phone and you film it. He's not like, oh, you don't film from this angle. Don't film from that angle. He, you know, whether if, due to his religious reasons, the deities he worships, his fingers have, you know, quite a bit of gold on his fingers. He gets about 70 cents. At least when I went for the surgery, that's what his spirits ask for. And he has a few nurses that work with him. So it's not a lot of money. And I just say to them, I go, where is he getting all these random pieces of flesh? And they're not like having a horrible smell in the hot Cuban sun, right? That's kind of my, and using these medical instruments and cutting me, and then there's blood. And then, you know, it's just like, hey, he's doing 150 surgeries on a busy day, right? So in my mind, I try to think about it like very practically. It's like, what we're going to do is scam. We're charging you a lot more money. We're dealing with a lot less people, and you're definitely not filming me. And if you are filming me, I'm choosing the angles, right? So for me, he's checking all these boxes, like boom, boom, boom. And then on top of that, the testimonials, right? And then we get there and we see all these people waiting around and we interview them. And it was like, oh, some of my family was healed. I had this issue before, but now I come back for this issue. And they're showing up really early in the morning, maybe 6 a.m., you know, to get their number online. You know, so you have this this situation where, you know, and you get to interview them, we got to talk to them, and they all seemed very sincere to me. And they were talking about real extreme pain that was gone, other issues, you know, that were miraculously healed. And it was really beautiful. I don't pretend that even a really good healer, everyone gets fixed. But when, you know, you're out of options and something amazing happens afterwards, I think that's pretty great.
And so you can actually watch this. How much of it could you get on YouTube without YouTube censoring your channel?
Well, TikTok is more likely to censor, honestly, in my experience. We obviously blur out my testicles, but we show everything. You know, he's not just using the machete. He's using a hook. He's using a hammer sometimes. He's got his whole, you know, bag of kind of rudimentary looking instruments, but he's getting the results. And I'm a very results oriented person. You can tell me any modality that you do. I just want to know you're getting results. And that's the other big part of my series. It's not about favoring one modality over another, because I do see that within the world of people that are into this. They're like, Qigong is the best. You know, Kundalini is the best. Sufi, mm-hmm. You know, they're very locked in that just their thing is the best, and it only Jesus is the only, you know, Christian, you know, whatever it might be. And I'm just more of this, hey, I've seen it shown up everywhere in every place, every time. So I just want to show it all as much as I can.
And what's the strangest thing that you've seen?
Strangest thing I've seen is there's a term called a physical medium. And typically what it is when you go into a trance, you physically alter. Now, usually when you tell people this, they assume you're on some hallucinogen or ayahuasca. But just to give you a setting, I'm in South San Francisco. I'm in an Indian woman's house. I think most of the people there were engineers, doctors, tech people, you know, very normal seeming. And this woman goes into a trance. And she starts to look like this very famous yogi named Shirdi Sai Baba. And I remember just watching it, and I was just very accepting of it. I was like, oh, At first, I thought it was just like suddenly there was like a statue there of an old man. And I was like, no, that's that old man's moving. And I was like, wait, that's her, you know? So it was kind of a delayed thing because I sat down and I started to meditate, right? And then after a little while, I opened my eyes. And that's when I was kind of like thrown off. And then, you know, she goes back and then she slowly comes out of it and starts to, you know, transform back into herself. And she has no recollection of what would happen when she was that yogi, when he would enter into her. And then in that place would start materializing things. I only saw that once. And for me, that's the strangest thing I've seen, which I know for a lot of people, that's really hard to accept coming from the West. And I get that. I'm not asking everyone to accept what I say or believe me. I'm just trying to create conversations and make people get curious and start to look into, well, how could that even be possible? And if you're only looking at regular physics, it's going to say no. But when you start to look into quantum physics and books like Holographic Universe, then it starts to say, okay, maybe this is how that could happen.
And what was, so you said materializing things?
Yeah.
Is this like waving your hands and then all of a sudden there's a golden bowl? Like what?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's a wave of the hand. Sometimes it's just boom, the hand closes and there's like a large thing in there. So she gave me this leaf and I ate it. And I remember the moment I ate it, like something just shifted in my stomach in a major way. You know, and when you take something, you don't really be, it takes a moment for it to digest and do it. It just was immediate. I was like, whoa. And then I got a little Rudraksha seed that was also materialized. So those were the two things that I got, this leaf to take and this Rudraksha seed to wear.
Oh, so she was materializing things for the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Not everybody. Not everybody got it. People would go up there and they wouldn't get anything. I guess I was meant to get something, so I did.
I've been to some of these things where there's a master and everyone kind of lines up and you're just waiting. You're just waiting for what's going to happen. Sometimes they tap you in the third eye or...
Yeah.
I've never been somewhere where they materialized something and gave it to you, but I have received things.
I can... there's one guy that does come around the U.S. a lot named Gurudev Brahmarishi. And I'll tell you this materializing story because I think what's also really cool about it also shows his omniscience. So I see him the first time and it materializes like a little agate rock for me, like really tiny. It was really cute. And I lose it because I'm a nomad and I was keeping it in my pocket. There was no locket for it and I lost it. And I go to see him a year later. And I'm in the back of this big hall. There's hundreds and hundreds of people to see him. And I say to my friend, and nobody's around us, right? Nobody's going to hear it and run up to him and tell him. Mm-hmm. He's also giving a speech. And I say, I just want to have perfect sight. And that to me meant to see things exactly as they are. All the karma involved, all the past lives, all the future lives. So that I realized for me and probably for everyone, our anger, our sadness comes often because we don't see things in the full picture. And I said, if I could see things as they were, I wouldn't ever be angry. I wouldn't ever need to get angry or sad because I would be able to just, I would understand. And so I was praying for perfect sight. And then I had a very worldly, practical prayer, which is I want that same rock again, but bigger. And so I go up to him and I see him and nothing happens. I was like, okay, whatever. And then this guy comes up to me and he goes, you're friends with Carla. Now, you're probably similar to me, Ra, where you've met a ton of people. And when someone just throws a name at you in a situation, you're just a little, you're like, wait, what? And it's like, no, you know Carla. And you're like, wait, which Carla, right? And he shows me a photo, a Carla from Portugal. I was like, oh my God, yeah. So her and I had gone to this yogi's ashram a while ago. He wasn't even there, I think, when we were there. We just went, we meditated. And he said, yeah, she came to one of our events. He's like, I'm the president of the organization. Get back online. I was like, okay. So I get back online and everyone's yelling at me because you're only allowed to be online once. And I was like, I don't know anything. That guy told me to get online. And they're like, okay. That guy, you know, he gets to do that. And so I get back online, and lo and behold, he materializes for me a bigger version of the first song. And he says to me, "May Shiva give you supreme sight." And he told me to put it right there. And so not only did he materialize the same exact rock, but bigger from a year before, but he verbalized out loud, "May Shiva give you supreme sight." So, and you got to understand, when he's materializing stuff, it's such a random gamut of things. It's not like everyone's getting that agate rock. I'm not saying I was the only one that ever got it. There's so many different things that he would materialize. So in this situation, it wasn't just a materialization. It was a materialization with an omniscience. A lot of times he wouldn't say anything to anybody. Maybe he'd say, "I love you," you know, but he's so it just showed me that I don't know, just builds the faith.
There's something there. And that's another example of trusting what is, right?
Yeah.
You could have spun out of control that you didn't receive a bigger rock the first time through the line. So how does somebody show up at one of these things? If somebody's watching or listening to this and they're like, "Well, I want to see what he's talking about," where does one go to find these events? Or do you have to be, are they secret? How do you get into these things?
That's a good question. So honestly, when I heard you saying that, my first response, and I don't want to make it sound a cliche, is going inward. And when you go inward, and you're really inward, you're gonna gravitate yourself into these situations somewhat seamlessly. I mean, the amount of times I've just stumbled into these things, you know, there isn't so much a website of, "Hey, these are some miraculous people." I mean, you know, each country has their scene, right? You could look up psychic surgeons in the Philippines and probably find a few on a website. You can do it in that way. But I think we have appointments with certain individuals in certain moments in time. And so, you know, if you have that karma and you have that appointment, you'll get there. And so for me, I read an autobiography of a yogi in 2003. And I was so taken, and I just said, "I'm going to find these people. I'm going to find them." And I knew that those people mentioned in that book, for the most part, had dropped their bodies, but I knew that they're still around, and I'm going to find them. And I have been finding them ever since. Now, whether or not I'm finding them or they're just bringing me to them, you know, we could talk about that. But I've just been, that's just the wavelength I've been on. That's where my mind's at. You know, I just wander around the streets chanting mantras, and I find myself in some interesting situations.
Not that you need approval for that answer, but that is an amazing answer. And that's also what I found to work for me as well. It's the intention. It's determining that this is the direction that I'm going. And then you literally stumble into these events. Like every one of these types of events that you're talking about, I have just been randomly invited, just walking along my day. And it's nothing I ever really put massive amount of effort into trying to find.
I'll give you an example. I think years ago, I can't even remember the situation, but I'm in a car with some guy. I don't know if he was driving or we getting a ride from him. And he said, "Yeah, there's a Tantra Yantra master coming to the New Life Expo in San Francisco." He tells me about it. And I was already deciding to go. I ran into him there. He's like, "Yeah, he's here." And I thought, wow, that's a weird place for this guy to show up, you know? So I'm kind of a little doubtful at first, because I don't expect the heavy, heavy hitters to show up to these things. I'm not saying it can't happen, but I didn't have a lot of faith. And he's like, "Yeah, this guy lived in a cave for like 10 years, just doing his thing." I said, "Okay, let me go check this out." So I start walking and I see him. And then this dude and I just stare at each other. He's just staring at my third eye and I'm staring back at his. He's seeing a lot more than I'm seeing, you know? And he had people trying to talk to him and he just ignored them. He's just kind of locked in on me, and he's, you know, showed me his yantras, and I bought a yantra from him. And he's like, "You come over, you know, sliding scale donation." And he was very gifted. He was very gifted at what he did. And, you know, he could see things and very advanced. And when I went to his houseboat in Sausalito, I was walking out with a friend and I stumbled upon a poster of a yogi. And the moment I saw it, I goes, that guy's the real deal. And it was Shiva Rudra Bali Yogi. And I didn't even know who he was connected to, but he was connected to Shiva Bali Yogi, who I'd read a lot about, and watched his videos, and I was quite obsessed with. And I said, oh, I got to go see him. So then that led me to Shiva Rudra Bali Yogi. So by going to see this, going to New Life Expo, seeing this guy, that led me to Shiva Rudra Bali. And so it's just all of those things, just how they unfold. And I think I've been really fortunate that I've been able to point people in the direction of people that I've been, you know, really impressed by and moved by, based on their interest and their geography, like where they are in the world.
Mm-hmm. What's your tool for determining if they are a scam artist? Because you mentioned the machete guy, Jorge, 70 cents. Or like it costs you 70 cents to see him
to get the surgery. Yeah. And then, and then $1 for each bottle of herbs.
Okay.
Which were like pretty big and they last for a while.
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially free in North American, like in USA terms. And then I just heard you say sliding scale. And I'm just remembering back to the times that I've been in rooms with, I've had psychic surgery done on me. Somebody was putting his hands on me and his hands were blowing up and his face to like the size of like a cartoon hand. Like it looked like literally bigger than banana fingers. And he was pulling out all of this stress from my body. And I remember once I opened my eyes and his whole face was like a balloon. His eyes were so swollen shut. He couldn't even open them. His nose wasn't even like protruding out of his face because his whole face was just a blowing up balloon.
I'd love to see this. I'm a nerd for seeing different type of phenomenon. I haven't seen that one. It's like,
this guy,
I don't need to collect them all Pokemon cards, you know, but like, I haven't seen that one. I'd like to see that one.
He worked with the pro football team as well. And he was like, they're, you know, behind the scenes magician, and he eventually had to stop doing it. This was almost 20 years ago when I first moved to LA, and I again just got invited to this party kind of scene. It wasn't really a party that we know when we say the word party, but it was a house with a bunch of people that were, you know, elite in the Hollywood scene. So my point of all of that was that I didn't pay anything. And any other time that I've been in a room, I mostly there's a donation, but it's not ever an ask. And then I've also seen people where they're like, you're going to die unless you pay me $500 because you need to take these herbs, $20 each, and you need this, and call me when you're done with it because you're going to need more. And on top of that, I've been places where they're like, literally like $4,500 and I'm going to put my hands on you for 10 seconds and I'm going to fix you. So how do you assess those situations?
So, you know, I think you get your like red flag. This is a clear and present scam. I think there's also a middle ground where, you know, maybe they like the good life a little bit and they still have some attachments and they still have their issues. They're working out in this world. And I'm not saying everybody who charges a good amount of money, I'm not trying to place any judgment. I'm just saying, but you know, I do know people that would charge, you know, maybe a couple $100, but they definitely had an ability. And maybe even more than that. I don't know, but generally, yeah, I find the best don't do that. And those have been the people I've been really lucky to be around. So I haven't even really dealt with many of those other people. I haven't really been in those rooms or those scenes where someone's, you know, $1,000, $500 to see this person. You know, I think money's a factor, something to look at, but I also just look at results and I try to look at objective results. If someone's like, oh my God, I just feel so much better. Yeah. I mean, you could watch a movie and feel so much better. I could give you a pep talk. You might feel so much better. I still have that part of me. I was like, were you crippled and you're walking now? Did you have cancer and you don't? You know, were you infertile for 5 years and you're fertile? Like, I'm looking for those kind of objective measurements. And I think that's part of just growing up in the West, and for myself, but also just for other people that are going to give me a hard time about it. I'm like, well, you know, you can give me a hard time, but hey, this is what it is, you know, and do with it as you will.
That's actually a good perspective shift, because it isn't the fact that they're charging a lot of money that necessarily has anything to do with their talents or their skills. It might just mean that they like a lot of money.
I think a lot of times it is. And I feel that, you know, I've always kind of looked at, like, there's a few different types of situations. The best of the best generally charge nothing. Generally, there are exceptions. The next level is, like, you know, they charge a little bit. And then there's some people that charge a decent amount, but nothing crazy, you know, and they can be very good, but they're not always the best of the best, you know? And I just find that when they get really, really amazing, but, you know, I might be in a situation where that's the best person and she's charging $200. So, okay, here's $200. Do your magic. You know, I saw a guy in Mexico, and he charged, you know, in Mexico, I think 200 is a lot. I think he charged like $200. You know, I paid it, but he had the real ability, you know, he could do it. So I'll say that.
And then what's your perspective on hallucinogens? Because a lot of people associate this type of reality with doing ayahuasca and DMT. Is that mixed into all of this?
For me personally, no. I don't participate in it. I don't do it. People are always shocked by that. They figure, well, you had a phase where you did do it. And I was like, no, it never interested me. It was never something I was drawn to. It was never anything I felt, never anything I wanted. You know, I would meditate and I'd see some wild colors. Sometimes I stare at something and I would see some interesting visions in my life. You know, it doesn't happen all the time, but it would happen. And I just never wanted it. It just wasn't for me. And, you know, to each their own, but that's, for me, that's never interested me. I've never been drawn to that world. I've never been particularly fascinated by it. If I am interested in ayahuasca, it's from the perspective of someone had cancer, they took ayahuasca and they don't have cancer, right? So then that's a situation where I'm kind of, or they had MS and they don't have MS. So those, okay, now I'm interested. So people's, you know, cathartic experiences, I'm really happy for them, but it is not something that I have been pursuing or delved into.
And so if you had a friend come up to you and say, I don't know how to meditate, what should I do? What would you say to that?
I think I get a sense, depending what person it is, of who they are. And I kind of will have maybe a different answer for each person. And I think that's actually a really better way to do it. I think we're conditioned, especially if we're taught a certain way, it's one size fits all. Mm-hmm. But if I sense they're kind of a more musical person, I was like, okay, we're going to do some sounds and some mantras, because I think that's a great entryway for them. If there's someone that's like fitness, and I was like, we're going to teach you how to breathe deeper and slower, and you're going to get really good at breathing really deeply, really slowly, and deeper and slower, and you're going to push your stomach further and further out, and you're going to bring it more and more in. And this is the game, and this is the practice. And eventually they get to a point where they like go beyond that, right? But that's the entry point. So you work with who it is that's in front of you. And that's something that I learned, I think, you know, in time, that don't just talk to who's in front of you. Don't, you know, I've told people to do things that I just know that was for them. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't tell someone else to do that. And that takes some kind of intuition or insight. And, you know, I've just been blessed to meet a lot of people. And you kind of just get a sense of, okay, this is what I feel could really benefit this person.
Yeah, to me, that's an example of expertise. I see that in coaches and teachers. And it's the same answer in different ways. which was a great reminder because the athlete one resonates with me, right? And I like how you're like, this is the game. This is the skill you're going to be learning. And as you were saying that, I'm like, yes, yes, I want to do that. Yes. I'm going to get better at something. Okay. Let's sign me up.
Exactly. And that's, you know, you're working with that. Where someone else is like, oh, that's not appealing. That's not, I don't want to do that. So you gotta speak to who you're dealing with. And I feel for me, I have both aspects of my personality. And I think depending on the time and the day, one approach will work better with me in a given moment than another one. So
where are you at right now? Because you had to walk 45 minutes to do this interview. Well,
okay.
Is so it I'm because you had to walk 45 minutes to get electricity? Where
I mean, it sounds so dramatic. I just don't know Barcelona's game that well. And I met someone when I was in Portugal, and they're here, and they had a quiet room. And I was like, great, let me get to your place. My location wasn't ideal. So no, I wasn't in a remote part of Spain coming out of the jungle for you to get a, I mean, it sounds way more exciting. It was literally just, you know, I didn't have my, in Barcelona, with the exception of being in empty churches, I have not necessarily, and you know, go on the beach a little bit, I haven't really found my easy quiet zones. Those are kind of in the way, like either the beach or an empty, well, to go in one of the big churches. I mean, they have quite a few, and they're pretty amazing. So I've gone into a few to meditate since I've been here. Yeah.
You were just in a country that I don't think I've ever heard before. Last. What was that? Anyways.
Wait, what country?
Were you in last?
Well, before here, I was in Portugal. But when I was in Portugal, I was in a town called Ericeira, which was a really great town.
Oh, maybe that's what you were saying.
Yeah. I was in Ericeira. It was an awesome beach town. I can see it. It's kind of like international surf town, skateboard town. It's really cool. I love that place. I just hung out there for a week. It was off season. It was really, really quiet, but it's so beautiful. And it's just definitely a happy place for me that it was now my second trip there.
And so you mentioned Spiritual Schmuck on YouTube. Where can people find you? Where can people access you?
So Spiritual Schmuck on YouTube, you can leave comments. I always check them. But also my Instagram is Nomad for Hire. So NOMADFORHIRE. And part of the reason I have that handle is because I do a lot of different random jobs. At the end of the day, I don't really like to ever charge anybody for meditation or chanting mantra. I'm like, listen, I'll do this. You just donate what you want. And I don't want to have to think about it. So I make money in other ways so that I can just, you know, just, hey, I'll do this. And you just, whatever you want to give me. And so that's how it's always been with that. And, you know, sometimes they're in a real serious situation. I say, okay, you know, go check out this person, go check out that person. So that's my Instagram handle. That's a way to send me a message quick.
Nice. Anything else you'd like to impart on us, impress on us?
So I think one of the things that I've really been drawn to, you know, is the relationship between guru and disciple. And I know in the West, that's not really, there's not really a popular idea. I think first off, people have had so many bad experiences with false gurus. But for me, you know, the true guru is who you are if your ego died. And then that will lead you fully to the divinity within yourself. And there are very few real gurus. So obviously, tread carefully. But I feel that when you have enough blessing and grace to meet one and you recognize it, go with it. And you'll know because they won't want anything from you except for you to evolve and to grow and to recognize your own divinity. And part of that process is to really humble yourself. And I find that's always, you know, that's challenging. But also part of humbling yourself is not placing limits on yourself. Because placing limits on yourself isn't humility. It's another end of the ego trying to block you. And so just let go of your stories about what you can and can't do and just go inward and trust in that inner guidance that, you know, that's taking you. And it takes practice, right? Like, you got to build that muscle, you know, and not everyone's quite there yet. Their mind's more messy. They're more distracted. But, you know, build that and start going inward and start trying to hear that voice. And just know that, you know, there are divine beings out there. And if you commit to your practice, you will be led to them and they will help you. When you feel like you hit a wall, they'll help you get further.
Thank you so much for the golden nuggets. There were many throughout this show. Practical uses for people to really know themselves from a full spectrum manner and expanding their self, right? So, and
I wanted to thank you for sharing that story about that very unique guy who would swell up. I find that so interesting.
If you know of
any other people that have that specific response to healing, I'd love to see that. It'd be so interesting to observe.
I don't really remember anything about it. I know that he had a partner. I think it was his wife who was in a car accident and was all mangled and had rods through her spine. And he helped her essentially get back to life. And like I said, he was working with pro sports teams.
Why do you think they kept it under wraps? Do you think it was just that time period? Like, it's so funny, like, because part of me wonders if that dude was around right now with social media, right?
Right.
Would he just be big on TikTok? They're like, look at this guy's hands blow up. That, you know, like, what?
I mean, we're talking about 2007 times, and this is not accepted at all back then. I mean, this is 20-ish years ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, in California, it's relatively safe, but I really think that people view people like that as a threat, especially when they're like white skinned. If you have somebody from India doing it, it's like, we don't understand that culture enough where, you know, some hillbilly is not going to feel threatened by that. But you have somebody that looks like us claiming to be supernatural, it really is threatening. And so there might be a safety aspect of why people stay in the background. And then also sports teams, if that whole thing is real, I'm not even really sure if it's just a show like WWF or if all professional sports are actually real. But if it's real, they would like to keep their secret weapons to themselves. I know that I read a book, I think it's called Unbreakable, about the personal trainer. He was the personal trainer for Michael Jordan and I believe Kobe Bryant. And Michael Jordan in the book says that he told the guy, I'm not paying you so that you train me. I'm paying you so that you don't train anybody else. Like, I'm giving you all of this money so that you're exclusive to me and that you're not teaching my competitors what you're teaching me.
So I have not to cut you off, do you have anything else more you want to add to that?
No, I was just saying, like, even at the level of like them trying to keep their personal trainers exclusive, somebody like this guy, they definitely want exclusive.
So I had a conversation with John Sally once, and I guess some Qigong master showed up to the Lakers when he was there, and the guy could tell John didn't think it was real. And he knocked John on his ass without touching him. And then all the guys started laughing because they thought John was clowning, like playing along in the act. And John goes, no, that's... And then I think what he told me, and I'm not 100% sure, but that Kobe took that guy for himself. I can't say for 100% certainty, but that's what my memory feels like John said to me. And I don't have conversations with John Sally on the regular. It was an Air One running. Right. But yeah, so I wanted to put that out there.
No, I mean, there's also that saying that millionaires don't use astrologists, but billionaires do.
Right. Yeah.
So you get to a certain level where if you do have an ability to take the advice from an oracle figure, it's going to make such a profound impact that you're more willing to be open-minded. And I think that professionals of all sorts have always been open to this, but they're going to lose their audience if they admit it, including presidents, Ronald Reagan.
His wife, Nancy, was always going to an astrologer. Yeah. And she didn't have much going on other than what Ronald had going on. So clearly, Ronald was indirectly going to this astrologer to make, you know, his major decisions.
Right. So this isn't new. Right. No. It's essentially been hidden. It's new to mainstream because it doesn't come through the TV. But the people that are actually making the programming, you can tell every movie, every show is based on this other stuff. Like every, like Star Wars, all of, like they're talking about the Force.
Yeah. I saw, I had this really funny experience one time. I was watching the news. And you know how they'll just like list off things real quickly? I swear it was CNN or something. And they go, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, psychic finds lost child in the woods. Da-da-da. And then they just go, they didn't even skip a beat, as if that's a headline every day. And then I go, wait, we're not going to go into that story more. We're just going to just throw that out there, psychic find, you know. And it just... The challenging of people's reality is a very uncomfortable thing. And I think now we're more at a point where we'll talk about it, but we'll just make fun of you and cast dispersions upon you. I think we're past the point. I'm sure some people are still hiding, but now I think we have it out there a little more and then we make fun of it. Mm-hmm. If we don't understand it or we don't believe it. So that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. It's a few decade long. It's a road of that before you begin to be accepted. And by that time, you're kind of maybe past your prime.
But it would be funny. Go on.
I've met people that I've met a girl within the last year who helps find missing children. She's able to remote view and do that.
And that's amazing. That's an intense gig.
This is just what she does. Yeah.
Some high stakes stuff going on. Does she work with, you know, just like government agencies or more directly the family?
So she came to our house actually. And she was, we were having an event at our house. So it wasn't specifically for this. So it was kind of just a quick conversation, you know, what do you do? Oh, this is what I do. But so we didn't really get into who she actually works for.
Yeah.
But I know these people exist. I've heard of these people before meeting her as well.
Absolutely. And I think, and then going into some of the stuff we've said, it's then for people to, you know, dig into like, okay, is this one of the legit ones, you know? And because, so I think where you and I are at is we know these things exist. And now we're trying to say, okay, you're legit. Okay. You know, we're trying to kind of poke and prod a little bit to make sure that we found the real McCoy, where other people don't even know if it exists, or definitely convince themselves, no, that's not real. That can't exist. You know?
Yeah. It's almost like an internal argument they're having with themselves.
Yeah.
Which is similar to what you were saying when you closed your eyes and you opened it. And then that woman was materialized as somebody else. There's like a, you have to gain your balance back when you see something you've never
it was a slow process, but I didn't really flip out. I mean, I think probably the environment, everyone there kind of knew what the deal was. I sort of heard about it, but I'd never seen it. So I was definitely the outsider watching for the first time, and everyone else was just kind of, you know, I mean, I guess there was certainly reverence in the room for what was happening, but nobody was, you know, screaming or going, oh my God, you know, like it's just, okay, this is what happens sometimes. Let's just sit with it.
And there's so much more that's going to happen. There's so much more.
I know, and that's what I'm really excited about, Spiritual Smuck. And as the momentum builds, for people to give us leads and say, hey, I would really love for you to go check this person out. You know, they healed my grandmother when she was a little girl and she couldn't walk, or, you know, whatever it might be, or, you know, so it just gets weirder and weirder in the most beautiful ways. And I just want people to know about it. And I want them to, if they're not quite ready for it, I at least want them to be able to laugh and enjoy the journey. So that's the Spiritual Schmuck. I'm not here to convert everyone, or, you know, I'm not. So I'm good with that. I just want to share. And for those that are interested, you know, they can check it out.
And we'll end with that invitation. For anybody, if they know somebody that you could go check out, I think that that's a great concept to lead with and end with on this show. Reach yeah. out and let Tay Devon know what you got, what you've seen, and maybe he'll come check it out. All right. Thank you everybody for being here. Tay Devon, always a joy to talk to you. Thanks for getting to a quiet place to do so.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I feel really excited to be part of your new podcast series that you're getting out there. I was hoping you would get this going soon, and you did. And I'm really proud of you for making a move on that. And I'm sure this series will be a very popular series, and you'll get to do a lot of really great things with it.
Amazing. Yes. Thank you for that. Take care, everybody.